For me, the kind of pure feeling here that it's unconfusing because it's not the most spectacular place on the planet. And even in the, within like 3 mile radius, it's not the most beautiful spot. Like just around the corner is more spectacular, and around the corner more is even more spectacular, and up there is even more, you know. And we're kind of nestled in here. And, you know, we have there's the mountain. We have a reminder of, with our kind of set of cliffs. But it's not like, because it's so, it's not like on the ocean and the cliffs and the whatever. It's with the dolphins surfing, like in Australia. It's, but there is something uplifting, I find here, that even, this is the fifth summer for me here. Because I was thinking, Abbott, I wonder if you would stay longer, if you would still kind of...
it's almost a newness.
But I do. I do still feel that. So it's interesting to wonder about wonder, if how much it's just the newness, the literal newness, and how much there's some other, like Virginie was encountering, that sense of things springing forth, and how that resonated with her own springing forth, as well as the simplicity of just being another happening, rather than being a special springing forth.
yeah, and I find it very healing too. Yeah. Like when I experience that moment of inspiration or whatever, it's like it touches a part of me. I feel touched by it, like emotionally.
Yeah.
And I think there's something very healing about that.
Yeah.
It's good to be there.
Yeah. I think I just want to say two ways that it might be healing more specifically, and then we could feel other aspects of that healing. And one is what Virginie already said, where it's the simple participation. So coming back to the simplicity, that simplicity or the ordinariness of springing forth, that we don't have to be special to be able to spring forth. So the striving to be special part can relax. And so that's a kind of spiritual healing. And then there's also, in the way that the culture hasn't offered many opportunities for that kind of encounter. And so going against the cultural grain by being most of the time outside, if not all the time outside, being more exposed. So let's just say like cultural and spiritual levels of healing, where healing means whole, like coming to be whole. So there's not the self-other illusion. Or it's less. But then, if we think of the moment of, or the tree, there is like the excitement, well, the thrill that the other is coming, is approaching me. The tree is approaching me, feels to be approaching me. And it's partly the thrill that it is other approaching. So this is a curious question in terms of the idea that the separation between self and other is total illusion.
Is what?
Total illusion. Like in this poem he's saying that it's when we're with what's real, we realize that it wasn't true to experience other or self. But there is the thrill of being approached by a vista or a tree.
I have the feeling of being approached by my own body.
Mm.
So I feel like a guest in my own shell.
Mm.
So can I approach that the same? Is that the separation as well?
Yes. Good. Good. That's really important, because just as a basic ground for what are we talking about, because when we think of self-other, we would usually think of self equals body and other equals others, other bodies. Mm. Or other material, and it's important to reorient the question to realize that other can be body also, and other can be mind also, me and my mind. my terrible mind, my wonderful mind, me and my path, like even the most close things can be experienced as if separate. And then what is the self that's left if it's me and my body, me and myself, also me and myself, me and my path, me and my anger, me and my... Any other experience of here, you here?
I think to me it's more kind of like an energy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling the energy of things growing and ground and sky. I don't really know how to say it. But
yeah.
More energy.
Yeah.
Like cactuses, I feel a lot of. A lot of meeting the sky, moisture, and something like that.
Mm.
And there is a lot of, feels like there's a lot of fruit here, actually. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I've been sat out there somewhere and I've smelt rosemary really strong.
Yeah.
The inhalation of rosemary, and it's like, wow, that's coming out of this little clay soil here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's coming right out of it. And I've tasted the soil, like, wow, that's really clay.
Yeah.
But the experience here is quite, it's a little bit hostile actually.
Hmm.
It's a bit dry.
Yeah.
I had a lot of trouble adapting to being here because of the real dryness.
Yeah.
And it's just seeing that change and feeling how rocks are dry.
Yeah.
Still, there's so much fruit in you, still much coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
Yeah.
And it's, I just see it's a big change because I lived in Spain for years and I really loved the dryness and the
heat
and all that. And then now it's like, oh, that's a bit much. You
know? Yeah.
Like a bit of a hankering for something a bit lusty.
Yeah. So the just a couple of things that I resonate with it to say. I grew up somewhere totally lush with trees everywhere and, you know, trees like skyscraper trees full of all these colorful birds and in the United States. So it might be part of what, not feeling home here, even though I spend time here. And also the appreciation that even out of the dry comes and by itself and stays and year after year and all the seasons, it doesn't actually stop in winter even, here. So that could be a curious thread to, play with in ourselves where the nature that's outside doesn't match either my present need, which maybe there's a present need for you for lush, or it doesn't match my cultural body, what I grew up with. but either way, whether it's like actually I need to soon to be in lush for the best for the spiritual path, or it just so happens to not match my my childhood or whatever. The thread of being able to experience this that he talks about, the arising of other gives rise to self, giving rise to self generates others, know these seeming to us facets of the one fundamental reality. That part is what we're coming back to. I'm just like saying, remember that line from last time that we read about six times. I can read it again more slowly, but I was assuming you remember, but okay. The arising of other gives rise to self. So the arising of other as nature today, especially, because when we think of other, I think we usually think of people first, and it complicates the investigation because there's so much going on. If we experience also other in nature, with or without the human part. It could be, it could simplify the feeling into what is self and other. How are they two facets of one? How do they arise? So this thread of the landscape doesn't match me or my conditioning. To be able to feel how easy it would be if that's unattended, if I don't accept that, acknowledge that and accept it, then it could be in the background as a growing separation that starts to turn into some kind of fire of anger, resentment, something that will start to grow. But also with acknowledgement and acceptance, that's a difference. There's either a cultural body preference or there's the path need. There's a gap. It's not an easy match. And not attachment to what feels like the path need or the cultural body preference. It can be an easy, impersonal kind of situation. So it's not like someone being dry to me. It's just a dry place. So it could be easier to feel, or a dry moment. Well, that's what could come next. Like, if it's just a dry place, then it could be, it's a dry moment, which is not necessarily out of place. It might be somehow appropriate, even if we're on our way to lush, that this moment is dry. But I think we can arrive there when it's impersonal and it's not really a problem that the place is dry, or that the place means this is dry. There's the richness of dry. There's how things come out of dry anyway, completely without any intervention of people, let's say. And then also the question of when there is a way that we resonate with what we experience outside in nature, so the view or the tree or whatever. Sometimes that feeling of approach is an experience of the dropping of the two-ness. That suddenly there is not separate. Sometimes that's what that is. So just to say the simple thing. Do not remain in a dualistic state. Avoid such easy habits carefully. If you attach even to a trace of this and that, of right and wrong, the essence will be lost in confusion. Although all dualities arise from the one, do not be attached even to ideas of this one. So I think there's a couple of juicy things in there. And one is that let the dualities arise. Like, the dualities arise from the one. Freely. And the fact that there is dry and lush in our experience, in our time, dry moment, lush moment, and in landscape is not a problem and is true. We're not trying to make it all be some mixture between dry and lush. Some kind of obedient.
Boring,
exactly. Some obedient, boring, homogenous thing that would not be alive. And when we accept and acknowledge and accept, or at least acknowledge when there's a kind of gap and maybe a little friction between what I think I want or what I think I need and what seems to be happening outside, what I think I want or need inside and what seems to be happening outside, when there's a gap and then friction, at least if I acknowledge that, it can start to be fruitful. If also then acceptance happens, then two things. One, the richness of this dry moment, for example, can really take place. And the movement towards if something else is needed can freely happen so easily and so sometimes faster than we even want. So you know that. Do not remain in a dualistic state. Avoid such easy habits carefully. I think it's just good to hear this statement, this advice, because how often in the mind it is the easy habit that could be avoided with care. It could be avoided. The easy habit of even a trace of this and that. If we follow through on the trace of this and that, then what's important is lost. I guess I want to say now, one evening we were singing, and it was the Hebrew song, Hebrew and Arabic song, of O Dievo Shalom Aleinu. And it means something like, may there be peace among us, or with us, and then may there also be peace kind of everywhere or outside of us. Like, may there be peace with self and peace with other, peace with us and peace with them, or us and them. And I kept feeling like up to the cliff, especially, like, may there be peace up to the cliff, especially because knowing that there's these rare eagles up there at the top, kind of, it's an important kind of very alive tension, not in a bad way tension for me, but like a remembering of the high, of the exalted, of the rare, of the subtle, kind of like remembering of the high and the low kind of at the same time. And it was just that offering of wish, the wish for peace all the way to the eagles and all the way down the valley, kind of. And so that's a definite self-other statement. May you be peaceful. I'm here wishing you peace. And so, and it felt a little bit, there was something strange to me in how that was happening in my mind as I sang, may there be peace up there, knowing the meaning of the words we sang. And it was interesting and cool that slowly, time and time and time again, singing the same, with the same meaning, so-called same meaning, the experience really changed from being one of self, other, may you be peaceful, to I guess very simply, I just think of your word pulsing this morning as if really being like one body with the cliffs and us and the valley down, like so there was a step in there that was as if a response or a resonation, that the resonance, that the cliff agrees that may you be peaceful and may you also be peaceful, and then may you be peaceful, may you be peaceful. And then it kind of, as if one wave goes one way and then the other wave comes back one way, and then it starts to harmonize into a movement that spreads out beyond a two-way communication. And very cool thing is then that has stayed with me since that evening, the feeling of as if our subtle body includes the cliffs. And the subtle body kind of pulsing or resonating with that wish for peace. So the deep place in us that wishes for peace, but not only in any one particular place. And that's one reason I don't usually give a translation of the words of a song beforehand, because it's so easy to stay trapped in may you be peaceful. may we be peaceful, may you be peaceful, as if the words only mean that. Whereas the experience of singing in the words includes, okay, may I be peaceful, may you be peaceful, but it also includes this movement without words, this wordless kind of expansion. Like this impulse or radiating wave that includes the feeling, may you be peaceful, may we be peaceful, may there be peace, may peace take place.
I was thinking when you do this with your arms, you look like deleted. Yeah. Yeah.
And turning into an eagle. Any other experience of being here?
About the connection with nature?
Yeah.
But today in the morning when I was meditating, I was sitting here and it was pretty windy and I felt chilly, and so I thought, oh, it's pretty chilly and it's windy, and then something changed so that I somehow connected to the wind, and the wind went through me as if I would not have a body, so somehow to be the wind, and I didn't feel chilly, I didn't feel warm, I didn't feel somehow not physically any longer for a moment. So this was to connect to the wind.
Cool. Great. Exactly. A great, exact example of, oh, chilly, oh, I'm sitting up, oh, it's cold. There's the trace of this and that, and then something in you may have noticed this is not a good direction. Especially, I noticed that I'm sitting in a posture that has another intention than the trace of this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And then experiencing the wind like as the first time or the last time. Sometimes if it's, oh, the wind again, oh, it's too cold. Then we go to the easy habit of meh, or I better fix it, you know, I better be warm enough to be able to meditate. But just the wind, just cold even. And then cold is not a problem, and cold is not even noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, without blocking out or erasing the wind, it's through the experience of wind. So it's a really beautiful example. Through the experience of what could be bothersome and could become the problem that I defend myself against with some, I add a windbreaker to my mosquito net or whatever, engineering or something. But through, which could also be possible for tomorrow, but in the moment, there you are. So through the experience of the wind, leaving behind the this and that of too cold, not too cold. A problematic thing that can happen in meditation, in life, in relationship is, I feel too cold and I prefer meditation a certain way, and meditation has this limited definition, and so I protect my version of meditation with engineering instead of letting the, which is hypocrisy really, instead of letting that deep wish for meditation, which is not a thing in of itself, but is that experience of not separateness, to let the wind show me meditation beyond chili, not chili. So that's one thing I find that nature can help, that we're often not able or willing with just purely human relationship to find. And it's good to practice in nature, is to really find the hypocrisy of the mind that's into this and that, into opinion, talking, thinking. So, but I want to meditate and I'm cold, and so therefore I can't meditate because I'm cold. Is an avoidance of meditation. It's an avoidance of the deep, if we can just in a simplistic way, call the original impulse towards meditation, before calling it meditation, the original impulse, doesn't care about chili. It doesn't, hasn't thought about chili, not chili. It hasn't gotten into being comfortable in the lazy way yet. So, meditation, wind. But then we might say, oh, but there's no wind. How can I meditate? If we get into the easy habits. So looking, being aware of what I feel when you were speaking, Doris, was that chili, and then something in you noticed that that's not a good direction and was able to kind of open to the wind without necessarily the mechanics of the mind going through, but just some natural opening towards what's more real. If we could really feel the hypocrisy in the thinking when we're getting into this and that, when we're getting into this is meditation, that's not. That the pull towards depth can work with whatever is there, with anything, including the movement to another situation as part of one option, as part of that. The great way is embracing and spacious. So embracing is one movement and spacious is another movement. The great way is embracing and spacious. To live in it is neither easy nor difficult. So if we hear the echo from the opening lines where he said, the great way is not difficult for those without preference, for those not attached to preferences. Here he's maybe clarifying the great way is to live the great way is neither easy nor difficult. So remember that I said it's not difficult, but that doesn't mean it's easy. It's neither easy nor difficult to live in the great way. Those who rely on limited views are fearful and irresolute. Irresolute is there's not a clear direction. There's not a firm. I don't let my steadiness come from underneath. I try to find steadiness by control, which is never going to be enough. So then I try to meditate, but it's too cold. So then I try to find a better spot, and then time for meditation is over, and I missed it. The great way is embracing and spacious. To live in it is neither easy nor difficult. Those who rely on limited views, or we could say when we rely on limited views, I prefer rather than like those terrible people who rely on limited views. When we rely on limited views, we are fearful and irresolute. So we're fearful and we spend the whole 45 minutes trying to find the right spot out of the wind or whatever. We don't have the staying power. We don't have the, we're not feeling that the pull down into the depth. Meditation is, I can't be cold when I meditate. Or, yeah. Exactly. I wanted to go into limited views because I would like to include the semi-conscious views. I can't. So there's the views that I'm aware of having, that and there's the preferences I'm aware of having, like I like to have coffee with this much milk and that much sugar at this time of the day and etc. And if we think that that is all that we're talking about with preference, then I think we'll end up not enjoying life, because some of those things are part of enjoyment of life, which is allowed when it's time. And if we include in the realm of preference, which who knows what the Chinese word or the Japanese word was and how it got translated to preference, and what other 50 words could give us a better flavor. I have no idea. But I'd like to include, like, I would like to include our general life tendencies and having a picture of our whole life and where we've started to sway to one side, and I don't do that. That's not me over there. I'm like this, and I do this. So self-definition that comes immediately without, we don't think it through. maybe the mind just goes, whoa, blank, not my territory, not my business, not my, like, that's aversion, that's ignoring, that's limitation, that's preference. But that's happening way before we think anything. We often, usually, don't even notice that movement. But I'd like to include that in preference, in the idea of preference. So another way would be to think through, and I would recommend just to have as a suggestion, not that you should do it, but sometime while you're here, you might want to spend some time writing. Again, he's bored here. Yeah. With only cars. How our friends would describe us, for example. So what someone else would see of us and which direction has been taken in a very eagle's eye view of our life. And sometimes, 4 minutes now. Sometimes when we look that way at our lives, we could see where there were these little, if there's a general direction over this way, like towards academic or towards being busy or towards whatever, towards outer, towards inner. I think that often we would see if that's like a general, a line that we could trace. We could see in different points in the life, maybe every 5 or 10 years, a little eruption, maybe every 3 to 5 years, where something happened, whether it was we fell in love or someone died or whatever, and we found ourselves like riding horses or doing something like really out of character. And then we went slowly or quickly back to the general line. So those would be moments to let them, to be receptive to feel where has there been this kind of preference or character. 2 minutes. Yeah, but that's 60 seconds, 2 times. It might be an expression of an energy that we would not like to express or go into, but something in us needs to do that, and so it's not up to us, it's not like up to what I like to do. That is very important for the way with meditation, so that otherwise we get into a bubble with our meditation, and our life is basically wasted because we just use meditation as an escape from including the depth and the height of us, of life. The great way is embracing and spacious. So it's okay. Go ahead. I'll come soon. We are included in the sense of it's not only hard and just raw and you don't want to do it, so do it. You know, it's not only that. But there is this spacious in the sense of ever-expanding, ever-expansive, not landing somewhere and staying there. The great way is embracing and spacious. To live in it is neither easy nor difficult. Those who rely on limited views are fearful and irresolute. The faster they hurry, the slower they go. So that would be another feeling to feel for in the overall picture of our lives is, what are the situations, what are the things that trigger that kind of busyness that burns up and wastes all of our energy and we feel exhausted or stressed out when really almost nothing has actually happened except the stress. So I was just going to say that it can be fruitful in this kind of retreat where there's the chance to deepen in the normal meditation ways and also in the ordinary life ways, and for that duality to cease to exist in our experience. It can be helpful to write if you feel like it. And one way to do it is just to have some paper. If you don't have paper, we can lend you, or not lend you, give you paper. You don't have to turn it in for a grade. You can keep it and lend you a pen if you don't have. And for example, 3 pages, and just write without stopping so that you're not writing so much from the head after a while, you're just writing. Another way that some people need is just to write 3 pages without any topic, just to clear the pipes, and then to start with a topic, which would be like the first part of a sentence, such as what I really like is, or what I really don't like is, for example. Just, it can be really simple. And then just writing without stopping, even if it doesn't make sense, so that something else can speak through your hand onto the paper about what are the preferences and what is the deeper counter preference, kind of. What is the deeper calling that you're avoiding, that some part of you is being pulled that way? And if we could do it consciously, then we have wings. Here I am again. What happens then is we come to that movement that is not the faster they hurry, the slower they go. The faster we hurry, the slower we go. It's the gestures that can be quick and many, but there's also without the stress and with an efficiency that leaves room for enjoyment of life. So I'll just finish with this line of this paragraph, the last line of this paragraph, starting at the beginning of the paragraph and reading through. The great way is embracing and spacious. To live in it is neither easy nor difficult. So again, like a little comment escapes me, where the limited mind or the stressed out mind would gravitate towards sometimes the easy. Oh, because I need to have a break and I'm so stressed out, I need a break, let's go the easy, I deserve it, or whatever. And sometimes it would gravitate towards the difficult. Okay, let's really get to work, and some way that I can feel that I'm really working. And the mind would like to go to the easy, and then to the difficult, and then to the easy, and to the difficult. But to live a life that is neither easy nor difficult, that's not about whether it's easy or difficult also. When we rely on limited views, we're fearful and irresolute. We can't decide anything. We can't follow through on anything. The faster we hurry, the slower we go. To have a narrow mind and to be attached to getting enlightenment is to lose one's center and go astray. If we think of Virginie's experience of, like, I'm going to meditate all summer and then not being able to meditate. And then the friction destroying the knot so that meditation could occur. When one is free from attachment, all things are as they are, and there is neither coming nor going. The wind just is, and chili is not a subject. Am I walking towards the tree, or is the tree walking towards me? Am I looking at the vista, or is the vista looking at me?
Can you help that?
Me. Am I looking at the vista, is the word he used? Mm. Or is the vista in me, looking at me? Any question or anything to say or anything else about your experience here in intimacy with nature?
Can you speak about there's neither coming nor going?
Yeah. It's partly the thing about the tree. It's partly the movement, that a spontaneous movement, let's say, that's that could be efficient without being stressed or stressful. It's also about that. Well, or to say more about the tree coming to me, or me coming to the tree, there's, it's not so much just that I wish peace for the cliffs and then they wish peace to me, but some other, where it is very much a sense of embrace, mutual embrace and expansiveness, including each other and also way beyond that. If we think about it in terms of meditation, there's less attention to, there's less importance given to what state is my mind in, and more about the adventure of what is the steadiness.
It's like losing the space by nature.
Yeah. But it's also that losing the importance of where my mind is at. If my mind is frantic or sad or elated, or it's not that important. But there, that doesn't mean nothing's important. There's something essential that, let's say, I can stay with.
And is there, in a way, a place where animals are, because they're not conscious in a way? They are not.
What's your experience?
Well, when I look at the horses and see all those flies in their eyes and in their head, it's annoying them, but maybe it is. Imagine that. And then I think, oh, those flies, and I wish I wasn't the horse. And this is coming from my eyes. They're just horses, and wind to wind, and fruit to fruit. Being a mother is being a mother, and so for me, yes, it feels like I'm not like I am trying to be an animal, but something like that. Just be like any non-human creature is.
Yeah.
But since we have this mind.
Yeah.
And not letting it get in the way anymore, or see it for what it is instead of being drifted away by it or with it. So.
And seeing it for what it is, what's that for you? What's going on in that department?
Some sort of app we don't have to use.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't have to guide us.
Yeah.
I don't have to believe this app or think it's necessary.
Yeah.
That I need it.
Yeah.
But it's telling me.
Yeah. Good. I think that when we can turn the app off sometimes, then we start to find what is the usefulness of that particular, that one specific human function. Rather than normally that is the human function. That's all almost that we experience. And if we just see it as a one more app among many available.
One more.
App.
It's like on an iPhone.
I've never, sorry?
You mean application?
Yes, yeah. But so I don't know so much, but if someone, Gemma has a phone and she can download an app, which would be, as far as I understand, is the ones I know of, a game for Gyan to play. That he knows how to enter to that game, that app. And then it's, you know, which letter goes with elephant.
Like a program.
E, yeah. I don't know why it's called an app. It's just a program, no?
I think it's from application.
I know, but why not program?
It's a form of application. I think Apple as well, as in Apple, the company.
Right. But I mean, because it could just be, isn't it just a program?
Maybe I'm wrong.
It's applied to the machine, and there's so many of them.
Okay, so it's a program.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
You can get one that does like anything.
Yeah. So.
Software, as somebody
would say. Yeah. I think it's good to feel that there is a place for that app, for that mind, for that function. We've been taught to misuse, and we misuse it. But just like the boy who was the bad student who was hurting people, and the you belong method with the mind. Like first seeing, you're disturbing everyone, every single other part of us, you're disturbing. What are we going to do about this? This is a problem. Might be needed. Like that step might be important instead of just dancing around the difficulty. But then it belongs here. But where? And this we have no, we have hardly even a landmark, much less any kind of map or directions or role models. But to feel that it has a place, that it does belong here, the mind, the thinking mind.
You were saying the other day about bringing consciousness into matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like this void is mirrored by this place.
That could be one function of the mind, is that what you mean?
Yeah, I'm wondering how mm-hmm. this comes, how this relates to what you're saying.
So with Virginie, we were speaking of how basically when we take care of things, including the body, including the mind, when we take care of other, really, but including matter, material, if we interact with love, let's say, and we feel that things do belong, and we, when it's possible, as much as we can, of course, without turning on the perfectionist app, we let things be in place more and more. And when something's in place, or when something's been touched with love, or treated with respect, then a kind of magic happens. That it's in, one thing we can say is it's much easier to connect with the basic goodness of that thing, and also it almost has a, like a kind of aura around it somehow, an energy field, let's say, around that one pole that's in place. It almost invites us to, oh yeah, there could be care, and there's harmony. Like efficiency, helpfulness, as well as beauty, as well as this kind of spirit in revealed or allowed to be expressed or something. And to me, this is an art, and art is, so we're talking about the connection between art and the thinking mind. So one use of the thinking mind would be for it to learn receptivity, so that means to be able to embrace a situation and still stay spacious. So when the two people who made this stone thing were working with it, they decided to make it, and then they did. There was an idea of what they wanted to have, which was water. They felt the need for water. And then there were the materials that there actually were available. And they didn't have money to like bring, or time or whatever, to bring more stuff here or whatever. So the limitations of the actual situation, the fact that no one would be here year round to take care of like some sort of pump, there's not electricity, whatever. So using what was available, having an idea, having the impulse to follow through on the idea, but leaving the, staying with the root of the idea. So staying, not going to the hypocrisy, like letting the idea take over. But the main thing was water. Okay, so it ends up being this little basin that can be filled with water, which adds something. And feel free to do it. The mind had to think to know, to mix the cement correctly. It had to be also open to find the stones that were around, and to be aware of this other, the rest of, not only this is not the only thing, not the only thing on the land, like the stones, actually some of those stones would have been good to have in the garden kind of thing. So not only my project, my life, my path, but this, the embracing and spacious, I can be with this fully, but also embracing and spacious with the whole, oh, the environmental. And then which stone pops out, which shape pops out, it involves the edge of the mind. And then the mind as calculating the amounts for the cement and like very much on the side. So that could be a way to start moving towards some maybe kind of definition of what is the mind and where does it belong? What is its kind of proper use? But first, what is it also? What is it good at and that helps? And what is it like good at in the sense of practiced at and quick at, but not what where that is a disease and spreads the disease? So this letting matter express consciousness or a higher vibration or whatever way you want to say it, I think if you've seen it, you know what I mean. I don't know how to put it into words, but it's something that mind could happily go along. It's a kind of, mind could be happy helping to do that. So it's worth inviting it to try. About animals, and also I want to again include plants as another living kind of creature that we can tune to and feel, maybe feel some of what is that experience of olive tree in general and olive tree in specific, or horse in general and horse in specific. Feeling again, consciousness expressed as matter in the creature as well as in the creation, like artistic creation or kitchen creation or whatever kind of creation. And I do think that two ways can be helpful. So I connect to the tree, olive tree, and to that horse, Taki, for example. And what comes across to me today? And not making any generalization about, oh, that's what horses are, and that's what olive trees are, but waiting, like, and then again, that same horse every day for the next few days, and then what about that other olive tree, and then what about the almond tree? And starting to let more come across so that we could also feel not only what kind of message or guidance could come to me in this exchange today that's kind of specific medicine for me, but also to help me also know what is a human being and what is life. And this is a little bit of, it's touching on what I would like to play with in the garden this afternoon, where some people experience creation, can we say, like matter, including creatures.
Including creatures. Creatures.
Yeah. As being different realms or kingdoms, so there's rock, earth, that's not breathing in the normal way that we think of breathing. It does breathe, but... And then plant kingdom, animal kingdom, human kingdom, and then three more subtle kingdoms, or it's kind of a patriarchal word, realms, that have a very specific, also limited, and also expansive function, that they can work in harmony together, that they need to work in harmony together. So to give one example of that, so you have a sense of what some people have experience. So with animal, they experience animal realm as coming, let's say, if there were plants. Plants don't usually have movement in the same way that animals have movement. There's something about movement, independence of movement. But comparing animal to human, they notice that animals care for their family only. There's not the possibility of caring outside of that circle. And that one step of human, that human quality brings to creation, is not only, like, many humans only care about self or family. That's true. But there are potential, and some animals don't care even about family. So it's not too, can't generalize. But we could feel whether it's helpful to feel if our potential as a human being includes not just caring for mine, but turning to include not only what's inside, but also what's outside. And entering the animal kingdom, what is it about movement that I can learn now by hanging out with horses or lizards, or in the garden there's a way to do it as well.
Horses come to eat the grass around my house, and they were walking around in single file, and we sat there watching them for a while going, why are they walking around single file all the time? And then we realised that the one in front with their tail is brushing the flies away from the face of the one behind, like that, and that then they would change pace, and that they were all looking after each other in this way, and they were walking around like this. And then they swapped, and the other one was going front, and they were fly swatting and that.
Cool.
And they were looking after each other.
Yeah.
Mm. Or maybe they were just putting their face where there was a tail waving, so that they could hide.
No, but you, other people
maybe
have noticed that they do it. And they'll be friends with certain ones in a bigger group, and they might stand head to tail and do it to each other if they're standing still.
Yes.
That it is something that...
Please do it.
This is also new. They're still figuring out. And so Sophia often steals the food from Taki. Taki's down, she's up. Like, they haven't quite found the harmony with the hierarchy yet. So, and Taki has some trauma that she has not lived beyond yet. So there's at least those, and probably way many other factors that we don't know about yet. So...
But it felt like very easy caring for each other.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Looking after each other like
that. Yeah. So that would be nice for human beings to learn even that much. Just being, and as being, well, what else is a tail for? But
we do that for each other at the lunch table when one is getting up. Wave the flies.
Yes.
Out of the place and the other one.
Yes. Great. Thank you. Any other comment or thing to say, question?
I just wanted to mention that a few days ago I decided I don't want to be enlightened. I never wanted to be enlightened.
Can you hear?
I don't want to be enlightened. I went with this enlightenment with the group of when I met Jaya, and I thought that it's never what I ever wanted. So, and that was such a relief.
Mm.
It really was.
Mm.
Also a bit scary because the belonging went away as well.
Yeah.
But it brought me back to where I started, like many years ago, and how I found this way in the language, which still fits.
Mm.
But there's not this thing. So,
great.
That was very nice.
Great.
Mm.
Might it, in a way, be a preference you get
attached to, not wanting to be enlightened.
Mm, yeah, I thought that.
Can be.
Yeah.
But the just dissolving of the concept, I think, just not like a kind of letting the hands come off the concept. Especially in the case of enlightenment, when it has nothing to do with concept. It can be really helpful to not fall into the easy habits.
Yeah, and it's back to
the non-hypocrisy.
Yes,
mm-hmm, the original impulse.
Wherever that goes,
yes.
I mean, it might
yes.
go to enlightenment.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes,
but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
yeah. And so it's good that you also have that reminder of not making a big deal about my non-enlightenment, but really sticking in intimacy with the original impulse or whatever. The beginning, what did you say?
Well,
starting point or something.
Starting point, I think, when I was like 10, 9.
Yes,
8, 7, 6,
yeah.
5,
4, 3, 2,
boom.
Yes. Great. Okay. Thank you.